Just call me angel of the morning, baby. Just call me something before you leave, darling. You gave me a love, a love, a love you don't find every day. Oh, hey, how are you?
Goosebumps are already.
Oh yeah, we got it here. You know what the text on this shirt says? Radiohead, and you can see it in the Zoom because it actually says it backwards when you're walking around in these streets. But you look in a mirror, you got a camera on you, and it says it the right way. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, sir. I'm rocking
Oh,
quite the
look at you.
t-shirt myself today.
Look at you. And you've kept yours fresh. He's rocking a Comic-Con's podcast t-shirt there, still available in certain sizes. We're going to be ordering some more here in the near immediate future.
I'm kind of tight in this shirt. You sent me the medium size.
Oh, the schmedium? You needed a large.
The schmedium.
I think I might still have a large somewhere I can cook up for you.
Yeah, I bought some of that new peanut butter pie they got at Costco.
Oh, and you just can't stop, huh?
God damn.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Can't stop, won't stop with that Kirkland.
That goddamn Kirkland. That Kirkland will get you know?
Yeah, they'll get you.
What is your favorite thing to do in the grocery store when you're walking around the aisles, you're going through, what is your favorite thing to do in the other than look for food? I mean, do you have a routine? Do you kind of wander aimlessly sometimes, like a lost doe in the woods, scavenging for berries after mother was taken from you way too soon? Is there anything, what do you do in the store, sir?
I guess you gotta go for the hot dog or that pizza slice first, you know?
Well, if you're in one of those stores, huh?
Yeah, if you're at that Costco, because you can't go to Costco with an empty stomach, then it gets out of hand.
I will say in this economy that Costco gives you a hot dog and a slice of za for like under $10. And you can't beat that, you know?
It's the least I can do for than buying $500 worth of grocery.
I mean, it's a lot, but at least it'll last you a long time. You know, you got a familia, you know?
It's for my bunker. It's for my underground secret bunker for the zombie apocalypse.
You got to get ready. You know, it's going to happen. And it's not going to be zombies, by the way.
No.
It's going to be gun crazed, psycho, insane fucking maniacs. You know what I mean? God forbid you pull up in somebody else's driveway or knock on somebody else's door. I'm sorry.
We had like three of those in 1 week, right?
We had about 3 to 4. And I'll tell you, these mugshots, you can't give them away. You know, you couldn't make this shit up if you try. These mugshots are these old octogenarians, maybe younger than octogenarians, maybe they're sectarians, if that's the right word. And they look like they're just getting ready to shift off their mortal coil. Why do they even have a firearm? And here they are answering the door. But, they're not making toss salads. They're killing innocent people or hurting innocent people. You know, there comes a certain time where people should either A, stop driving, right? B, stop owning firearms. And then C, maybe just give it up, just pack it in.
Maybe run the country, but don't be shooting kids out in your front porch.
I mean, how can you not get fired up about this? Are you a little fired up? As a papa, I get a little fired up.
Yeah, I'm
You
a
know?
proud papa. It's crazy.
You know?
Was it Utah? It was like a secluded house. I might have been New York. Then it was the little boy with that angry fucking ogre. What's his face? Dude, that you see that mug? He had like one eye almost like dying on
That's
him.
what I'm talking about. Some of these folks, like, you know, they always say, like, innocent until proven guilty. No, I say, these motherfuckers look guilty from the get-go. And some motherfuckers always trying to ice skate uphill.
No, I'm getting ready for all of that. But yeah, I don't know if it's psychos that are gonna come for us or maybe a carnival.
I feel like something wicked
Wicked.
this way comes in these troubling times. Okay, let's do another take. What's that, Johnny? Johnny. No. Turn the AC down, Johnny. Turn it down, Johnny. Sorry. Oh, he's not. Johnny's not here? So who's doing the who's engineering coming? Oh, it's Sam. Sammy. somewhere. We are so proud of him. We come down to... And so hard, we're so. That was Sammy Sosa. Sorry, I didn't know you out of retirement. We should start the show. I'll land another one somewhere in these troubling times.
Are you gonna bark all day, little doggy, or are you gonna bite?
Yeah, yeah.
There are several sacred things in this world that you don't ever mess with. One of them happens to be another man's fries. Now you remember that, and you'll live a long and healthy life.
Just us, the cameras, and those wonderful people out there in the dark.
Science fiction, the wave of the future.
I wonder where a guy, an everyday Joe like myself, could find a little action.
Bye.
Yeah.
Welcome to Comic-Con's podcast, a geek podcast for the rest of us. Who are the proverbial motherfucking rest of us? Well, the rest of us that just don't give a shit, right? Don't take this shit that seriously. My name is Nick Stevens. I am your host, but away aren't we all trying to navigate through Greentown, Greenville, Illinois, whatever the fuck, and who gives a shit, based off a Ray Bradbury novel, whatever the fuck it is. We're illiterate on this podcast. This was turned into a movie. We're going to talk about it. But before I get into it, before I open the jacket, before I take off the clothes, before I put my pants on one leg at a time just to take them off, throw them in a hamper and call it somebody else's, say hello to returning guest, friend of mine, friend I met through this podcast, friend I met through the interwebs, like interwebs interweaving like arachnophobia. Jeff Daniels couldn't put it. John Goodman came to save the day with the flamethrower and no one was the wiser. Here he is, Mr. J. Clark, give me what you got.
Hey, man, thank you for having me. Good to be here.
I just wanted to give you like somewhat of a hype intro because I really do love you and I love having you on the show and I love just talking. I love hanging out with you. I know I don't jump in those three amigo threesome threads that much, but the truth is, you know, papa busy, you know, and somebody in that thread, we don't have to name names, they just kind of they go off on some side tangents that I don't like to endorse. But you know, how are you, sir? How are you doing in this world?
Yeah, man, I'm doing fine. I'm glad I'm here. Tired, but who isn't?
I know it's a late guy. I know I say we're gonna start on time once in a blue moon or once in a moonlight, and we never do. Why start now? You know,
we're proud papas.
We're proud papas. We got things going on. Everybody knows it. You're here. I'm here, and I'm definitely queer. So let's not waste now. I do love you, though, in a heterosexual and homosexual way. I love you both ways because I just think you're great. And yeah, man, I just, you know, life is too short. And I think it's great that we got to meet each other the way we did and that we fucking talk almost every day about the shit that we love, you know.
Hey, man, send the love right back at you.
Listen, there's a little movie. It came out in 1983 starring Jonathan Pryce. And Jason Robards and anybody else in it. Oh, a young Pam Grier, young Pam Grier. Came out in 1983. Like I hinted at the top of the show, based on a Ray Bradbury story, they tried to get this movie made for quite a number of years. It was finally made by Walt Disney Productions, not Pictures, Walt Disney Productions, in 1983, 40 years ago to the day we're doing the show. Because I don't fuck around. I do my research. And I got to tell you, I picked this one because it was a gem from my youth. And when I say my youth, I have to say like this, a gem from my youth, you know. Now, you had never heard of this. This was not a gem from your youth.
Not at all. It's the first time I've seen it.
Now, answer me this, and you can tell me the truth. Riddle me this, Batman. Did you actually enjoy this movie?
Yes, I did. It's a wonderful picture.
Wow. See, for the folks that maybe don't know, what Nick Stevens likes to do on a regular basis is handpick personally. Handpick movies and gems for Mr. J. Clark to watch. And these are usually not so much gems as they are polished turds, horrible movies. And he's been a real trooper all the way through. And I keep telling him, like, one of these days I'm going to pick a good movie. And he jumped on a few other shows. But if, in terms of the solo, the duo, you and me, I mean, I think we started with Vampirella. I think we ended up in the Battle Beyond the Stars. I think we waxed rhapsodically about some of their garbage, as you like to say, or some hot piles of steaming trash. And I got to tell you, there's no leaking pussies on this one. There's no no vaginal discharge of a yellow coloration. This was a pretty tame flick, right?
I mean, grounded, kind of magical, kind of scary. It's
kind of magical, yeah.
Yeah.
It is a little scary, isn't it? Well, this movie actually scared me when I was a little kid.
How old were you when you watched it?
I must have been about 6 or 7, and I had nightmares, for sure. Now, granted, sure. Peter Weller getting blasted away in the opening 10 minutes of RoboCop didn't give me any nightmares. And yes, kids, I know I tell that story a lot. And yes, I know that I'm getting early onset dementia. But the point is this. None of that shit scared me. Violence, and even gory violence, never scared me. But the idea of, like, a carnival coming into a town and mysterious people coming into a town and touching other people and those people disappearing and a man selling lightning rods while a storm far away is brewing. I mean, all of it's very foreboding, is it not?
Yeah, very foreboding. I could have kept listening to you for hours. Really? Narrate that.
should I do a whole new podcast where I just
do the whole movie.
But I don't tell you what it's about. I just do like a little summary.
No, it's great. It's kind of, it's magical, kind of scary, terrifying at times. I feel, man, there's so much to talk about here, I guess. I feel also that there's somewhere like a different cut of this movie in there too.
I read that Ray Bradbury was disappointed with the final outcome. This movie was edited. Even at the last second, the little voiceover narration at the beginning of the movie, at the end of the movie, was added as an opening prologue and epilogue, so to speak.
Gotcha.
And it's very like, wants to be Stand By Me. It's like, and the town was Greenville, Indiana. And I was a little boy trying to find my way. And my best friend was Jim Nightshade. And my father was played by Jason Robards, who was 70 in this movie, even though he's supposed to be playing a 40-year-old man. There's a lot of that because I think it got chopped up. I think the studio wanted it to be something. They wanted to do darker Disney movies at the time. It was the 80s. They were like, we want to be on par with other movies out there, And I think they were trying to find their place. This was, as Disney did a lot of live action movies back in the day, 60s and 70s. They adapted all those great, old stories like, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Mm-hmm. Robin Hood with Errol Flynn. So they were doing all that stuff. And I think they wanted to break away from that, break away from the animation. Even though I will say this, their old animation movies were kind of dark, weren't they? Like that first, if you ever watched that original Pinocchio?
Yeah.
Like, goddamn,
Yeah. I mean, aren't all of these stories very dark in their inception, even before Disney?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, I think back on not even just the old animation, but even some of those old live action ones. I mean, I know you had the Cat from Outer Space and like silly shit like that and Freaky Friday and Herbie and all that. But there were other movies out there too that were just, I think the Black Hole or the Black Comet? That was a sci-fi one. It was a sci-fi one, but it was kind of dark.
Yeah, because a lot of these stories, I think they were created in the beginning to kind of like maybe scare kids more, than entertain them.
Like even like all those older alien movies, like not even like the ones we know, but like I think Cocoon. I want to say Cocoon came out around the early 80s.
Yeah, but I'm referring not so much to the movie. I think more of the myths, the stories, these legends per se.
You're right. There is a little bit of darkness associated.
Yeah, there's
with
a lot of darkness. Like when you think about it, Pinocchio is basically an adult or a parent saying, "Hey, don't lie," and then tells him a dark story, a curse upon your nose.
Don't lie, or you'll die.
Yeah,
you'll die if you lie. You'll die if you lie. Sorry.
Don't go into the forest, what I'm saying? Because then there's like a witch and she's going to offer you candy and she's going to bake your ass.
Right. And don't worry about it. This creepy clown in the sewer is not going to hurt you at all. but he's going to put on drag in one movie and then he's going to wear clown makeup in this one. And then before you know, he's going to play a wizard in a made for TV movie with witches. And that's going to be equally scary as well, because he's Tim Curry. No matter what he does, he's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing this, that train coming, you know, into town, that music, James Horner music. Even the boys were kind of like creepy, right? Like even the main two boys, Jim Nightshade and what is it? John Holloway, James Holloway,
Yeah, Jim
Holloway? Sure. I mean, what year is this even supposed to be set in? Is it like set in like the early 1900s?
I believe so.
Because the cars looked really old.
The cars, yeah.
And the town has the town barber. You got the town bartender with a missing leg and a missing arm.
No, I'm glad you mentioned the train coming into town. You know, the carnival. It is kind of like that. I was watching it, and it reminded me kind of like a kettle,
right?
You know, it's about
the whistle,
and it's like that pressure build up.
The tea is ready.
Yeah, like it seems like they're the manifestation of what's like brewing underneath.
Yes, and the town itself, even before that goddamn carnival shows up, and we'll talk about the carnival, but even before Mr. Dark's pandemonium circus, which, by the way, couldn't be more telling of a horrible things to happen. But even before they roll into town, doesn't the town seem kind of like sad and dreary and like almost haunted, or maybe there's been some tragedy there? You know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to get at?
No, it felt like a Norman Rockwell kind of thing, but because it's set in like October.
Yeah, without the sunshine, it's got that dreary.
Yeah, it has that quality that things are about to change, you know.
Yeah.
Winter's coming, death is close.
Oh, Jesus.
And so I do like how the movie kind of sets that Norman Rockwell thing, but then very quickly we kind of, you know, understand that like these adults in town, like you mentioned, the barber and Jason Robards' character, Charles. Yeah.
Right. They all have, if not demons, they have like regrets. You know, that like the bartender, you know, is an old football star who lost his arm and his leg, and now you know he pines for those old days of throwing the football and running through that fresh cut grass, and you know he's talking about it to his patrons. Then you got the barber who's fantasizing about, you know, brothels and exotic women from far away, you know. And then you got the guy down the street with the cigar shop who's talking about having million, you know, wishing he had millions of dollars. So everybody that's there doesn't really want to be there. And then you got Jason Robards, who's like, look, I'm just an old dad. My only regret is that I'm too old to like really do things with my son. I'm just an old librarian, you know. Everything's kind of sad and downtrodden. You got the old teacher who's, quite frankly, apparently she used to be a babe back in the day, but now she's an old, crusty clam of a woman, you know.
It hits. I get it, because you know we're all getting older ourselves, and we kind of value the nostalgia. And this is, you know, part of what we do the show, right? It's
kind of God, is that what this that? Is this show like that sad time where we come in here and we're like, remember the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Oh my God, what I wouldn't give to sit down on a orange crush carpet and watch the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fight Shredder once and for all, you know. We're like looking back into our you know, our hourglass of time, like, do you remember that show? Do you remember how good it was, you know?
Yeah, remember, don't forget.
That's
what's happening to these characters. I feel like they are kind of remembering, and they don't want to forget, or they want to relive their, you know, regret is a very powerful kind of like thing in this story too. Not all is perfect in you know, Norman Rockwell setting town. Yeah.
How great is everybody though? I mean, I think everybody works pretty well, right? It's not a robust cast. And like I said, there's only a few names that I recognize, but everybody works pretty well, specifically Robards and, of course, Jonathan Pryce when he comes into town as Mr. Dark. I thought he did a great job of being the foreboding.
Amazing. Yes, I did like Robards a lot. I was confused at first with you know, why him being so old and the children. But the story, I get it. You know, by the end of the movie, I was like, okay, he had to be old. I think that character works better, being that old. Jonathan Pryce was a scene stealer. Like, he was my favorite thing about this
movie. He's probably the reason why you watch this movie. I mean, and also to watch a somewhat scantily clad young Pam Grier looking sexy as hell. And she just kind of takes people out with some 80s mysticism. And there's tarantulas, right? Isn't there a scene with those tarantulas crawling all over the room?
A shitload of tarantulas.
Yeah, a lot. People love those tarantulas, let me tell you. You know, are you a tarantula guy?
I can see that, like, myself watching that. When you watched it, like, when we were 8 or 7 and freaking out, because that was like a lot of fucking tarantulas everywhere.
I remember the woman, the scene where the substitute teacher, obviously she goes into the fun mate. The scene where the old teacher, the old clam of a woman, goes into the fun mirror maze, and I guess she sees images from the past of her, you know, looking beautiful and young again.
Yeah.
And I think
that's
the
theme in the movie. It's a reoccurring thing, you know, mirrors, right. Reflections, kind of
age,
like,
you know, age and mortality.
Mortality.
When she goes blind and that little creepy kid, like the guy that was turned back into a kid after going on the carousel backwards. Don't worry, kids. We're all over the place, but we'll get there. I mean, that shit fucking, I think that shit unnerved me. It was stuff like that that unnerved me more when I was a kid. Like, wait, how did she turn blind? Or why the fuck is that carousel going backwards? Like, that shit was creepy as shit to me as a kid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was a great character as well. Because I think it's because what she desires the most is to be that person again, that beautiful young person. And she gets it, but it's kind of like a curse where I will make you young and beautiful again, but you will lose your sight. You will never see yourself again.
Everybody gets what they want at a price. It's a very Needful Things-ish kind of thing. And I say that because I saw Needful Things after this. I'm pretty sure this story came first, which is interesting because Stephen King tried to do a treatment of this movie, but they turned it down. And ultimately, he would go on to write Needful Things and make a movie out of that, which is, you know, the devil comes to town and gives everybody what they want, but of course they sell their souls. So I mean, and I guess that story in itself is, of course, tale as old as time, you know what I mean? I guess that shit's, it's been done before, but it's unique in this sense, because even though the circus says pandemonium, which literally means where the devils live, I mean, you don't necessarily see it coming. I mean, I hadn't seen this movie since I was like 6 or 7. And I forgot a lot of the stuff that happened. Like, I forgot Mr. Dark essentially purposefully seeks those children. And I can't remember why. I think he was...
because they witness something. They see more than what the...
what they were supposed to.
Well, yeah.
They saw the act behind the curtain.
More than the average person would. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Because anybody who would enter those little realms or the situations wouldn't really come out of it. If they did, So they will come out of it soulless or a different body, you know, or de-aged or...
so hypothetically, if nobody had seen them doing what they... or seen what they were really up to, they were just going to take over the town and move, suck everybody's, I guess, their life force or their souls out of their bodies and then move on to the next town?
Well, yeah, I think I see it more like Wizard of Oz in a way where the movie starts with them peeking behind the...
right.
And what would that movie look like?
What would that movie look like, right?
Yeah.
But I guess he needed, like, people's souls to, like, thrive, I guess.
Yeah, they play with people's souls, because that's kind of, like, very demon-like. And that's how I saw him. I saw that character, Mr. Dark, as kind of like the devil, or very, you know, demon-like, where they kind of play on those, you know, those emotions, those triggers. They give you what you want at a cost. And that's a struggle, and it's not only, like I said, I think that character kind of like fleshes what's already happening with a lot of these characters. They're probably already thinking, what would I pay, you know, what would I sacrifice to do this? So, you know, what happens if that guy comes knocking, you know, makes it happen?
What was your immediate draw to this when you start watching it? I mean, obviously I say let's watch this for the podcast. You sit down, you watch. When did you actually get, like, enthralled in the movie? Was it when the carnival finally comes to town, or when
the first couple of shots. Yeah. I saw some tracking shots on and some beautiful shots that I was already kind of impressed. And
you actually like the way it was filmed.
Very painterly. Yeah. It was like watching a painting. And that was very interesting because almost immediately, and this is throughout the movie, you kind of notice there's also like a TV quality aspect to it, and it switches. Like, you can go from this, like, you can call it almost, it might have been an influence. Like, my favorite cinematographer, Roger Deakins, right? He did that Jesse James movie with Brad Pitt or whatever.
And there's a train scene.
With the figure, the dark, I just saw the dark figure walking towards the light of the train. So that's what that train scene reminded me of. So I'm already thinking about, yeah, cinematography is great, but there's, but then, yeah, there's some scenes that they look almost TV quality. Like, so right from the beginning, I'm like, okay, what's to this? I don't get it. Like, why does it feel, which kind of like this movie, cause this movie is so good that it can survive that. It did. And it kind of works too subconsciously in my mind. Cause it is, it's just a tale of two worlds, kind of like, you know, it's our reality, but there's this, and it's not overproduced. I love the effects and how it kind of lets you know that there's a veil. It's a very thin veil.
And even the effects are pretty practical, you know? The effects are pretty practical. There's some CG stuff and lighting stuff that they do. There's a scene where, like, Mr. Dark is, you know, confronting Robards in the library where he is, and he's ripping these pages out of a book, and the pages glow.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that. I can't wait. Yeah. That's, you know, that's so great.
But I liked how, I mean, I can honestly watch stuff like this, and that doesn't take me out of it. When I see stuff that's, even if I see the blood and I go, oh, that's obviously not blood, or, oh yeah, that's definitely like movie magic there. It doesn't take me out of it. It doesn't take me out of the narrative. The only thing I noticed this time watching around as a grown up was I kind of wish it had more detail towards the carnival and kind of what their real motivation was, or what more behind the scenes stuff with them. Like, I kind of wanted to see more, maybe even more creatures, or maybe like another side of Mr. Dark that, you know, if he is supposed to be this devil or devil incarnate, or even just a minion of said devil, you know what I mean? And I never read the original book. Maybe that speaks more to it, or maybe it's all of a mystery. But I wanted to know, as an adult now watching, like, what is their motivation? Like I kind of touched on earlier, like, were they just going from town to town to town to feed on souls? And was it just this town? Was it only this town? Was this?
And that, sir, is the remake.
And that is the remake. And we'll definitely get to that.
I agree. It's there's a lot there. That there's a lot I think they left on the floor. We could have like weaved in and explored. But I think the practical effects, and it feels grounded still. Like, it doesn't feel too magically whatever. It's there's the practical effects that we do see are very well done.
Oh yeah, and I'll tell you this: I have no desire to ever go to this town. I mean, that town was so goddamn sad. Even at the end of this goddamn movie, when they're running off together, when Jim Nightshade and Holloway and Holloway's dad are running off together through the town square, it's still cloudy, it's still windy, it's still foreboding, and like, yeah, the carnival's gone, but is it? I mean, is it really? And how about that goddamn lightning rod salesman? Wasn't he great? How great was he?
He was awesome. Was he like a homeless person, or was he like a?
I think he was a traveling salesman who made these.
Oh, traveling rods. Salesman. Okay.
And he obviously was hard on his luck, and he was on foot. And I mean, even when Jim Nightshade bought a lightning rod, he only gave him like $1.50. You can tell it's based off an old book. Like, the stories, like the characters in this and the setup of everything, it has like a, it almost has an assigned time frame. Even though it was made in the 80s, this movie really works in like early onset America, like post-Depression America or right before Depression America, where some people are hard up on their luck, or after some people have recovered and people are trying to bounce back. I don't think you can make this movie or even tell this story in a modern setting now with like cell phones and not to say that there isn't hardship in the 21st century, but what I mean is, I guess, like you said, with the Norman Rockwellian thing, I think this works better in that old Americana, old town setting, you know, like on Main Street where the barber sits and there's the bartender, Johnny, you know, where everybody knows your name, you know, except it's not cheers, not a good time. It's a very bad, lonely time. Oh, hey, how you know, you doing?
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point, because the town kind of is that character.
Right,
that,
right.
That represent, and also kind of represents the other characters, where from afar it looks normal, it looks great, good, but there's stuff happening underneath for sure.
So how intrigued were you with not only just the carnival and like the veil behind it when you realize obviously something wicked this way comes, but how intrigued were you with them confronting Mr. Dark and Mr. Holloway confronting, when I love that scene on the town when they're doing that parade and Mr. Dark is looking for the boys and he confronts him, you know, and Robards just lies to his face, you know, and he's like, oh yeah, those boys. Now, mind you, Mr. Dark is showing him a spitting image of both boys on his hands that have just
the materialized. Tattoos, yeah.
The tattoos materialize out of nowhere. And he doesn't bat an eye. He doesn't flinch. He just lies to his face. He knows that this person is just bad news. He's evil personified and he's just going to smoke a cigar and try to avoid it. Now he might not be a fighter, but he's not dumb either. And I almost like, I like a protagonist every now and then that's like that, you know, that kind of uses his mind and it kind of, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm not so sure about you, you know, like how intrigued were you with that essence as opposed to him coming in like Galahad, you know? And
I mean, it works for, yeah. It works for that character, cause he's a librarian. I feel like he's this character that has lived, that has read these
right.
stories before.
All these stories. Right. Right. Right.
Characters, these mythic characters. Well, what happens when you, you know, you meet one in person and he's after your boy, you know? But I did think it was that he brings that quality, cause he's not young.
No, he's not.
Not going to lightsaber it out, you know, in the end of the movie.
No, and he's got a lot of regret, right? He's a old man filled with regret, waiting to die alone. And Gotham City must be allowed to die. If you don't know your gooks. But I love that scene in the library where he confronts him again, you know, and the boys are hiding and he's ripping out those pages out of the book and he's like,
probably the best scene in the movie.
It's a really good scene. And I just happened to share it on the social medias and I had some people hit me up going, what the fuck is that? But I think I love it because who doesn't get older and kind of go, oh man, where are my years going? Right. So that's one thing. Everyone kind of looks at their mortality, you know, as we get older and you lose loved ones and you get older and, you know, as a saying goodbye to some people and then realizing you're getting older and maybe your kids are getting older, or maybe your friends are getting older. And, you know, all of that part of mortality and growing up is like, it has like that, a little bit of that. There's a little bit of sadness, right? Like, of course we get older and we experience new things and that's life. But that scene really sets in because that's the main character's biggest tragic flaw, right? Is that he had a weak heart and he never jumped into the river when his son was, his son fell in because he didn't know how to swim. And then again, yet another man jumped in and saved him. And that's always pained him. And he's had regrets. And he's an old man filled with regret, waiting to die alone. So, I mean, just that last one got me. I just think it works on so many levels, no matter what movie it is or what story it is. I think you're right. I think it might be one of the best scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
Even though his son's like saying, "Dad, don't listen to him. Whatever, don't listen to him. You're not old. I love you." And of course, that's again proud papa here, but it's a son's love for his father and a father's love for his son that ultimately saves the day at the end of this movie. You know.
Yeah, that's
and the crazy lightning rod man. He helps too.
Yeah, that's his journey, right? He's filled with regret, and he wants to kind of recapture or redo some of these
Right.
situations. Isn't it the carousel? What I was thinking about was that you would get on that, right? And then you would basically revert to being young again. So it's your did I lose you?
No, my
Oh,
wife
okay,
was
my bad.
pantom my wife was in the other
My bad. I
she was
thought.
pant she was pantomiming like she was gonna kick me in the face, so I had to act it out. That's something we do with each other. Like sometimes she'll just
That's
be like,
fine. I just thought
"Wow."
the audio cut off for a second.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I pulled the
No,
thing.
it's
Pulled the
fine.
thing out of the hole. God, plug it back in. Keep going.
So, where was I? Shit.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Oh
We're talking about the library scene. Oh, the carousel, the goddamn carousel. It goes
yeah, the
backwards.
carousel. It was interesting. Like I was thinking about how these like characters go in on the carousel and reverse back and reverses the age. You know the henchman, the big brute henchman, turns into a little his own
Creepy
version of a little
kid,
boy.
creepy kid,
Yeah,
creepy,
creepy
creepy.
kid. He was
Yeah.
creepier as a kid than
Than he was as
as
the
the henchman.
henchman. Yeah.
Yeah. I did love how these concepts. It's you can almost think of time travel because isn't it like reverse aging, kind of like time traveling in a way?
Sure, of course
Weird.
it is. I mean, either you live long enough to become the villain or you die a hero, right?
So yeah,
By the way,
what?
pause right there.
Yeah.
What do you like better for time travel? Do you like stories where somebody time travels in a device, but they stay the same age they are? Do you like the quantum leap theory where you're still you, but in essence, but you're traveling in somebody else's body, you land in their body? Or do you like it like what happened here, where you go back in time physically, but I think spiritually and whatever you would call a soul, and I would imagine spiritually, and like your mindset, like obviously that evil dude, if you want to call him a henchman, he was still evil in the kid form, but he was
Yeah.
just in the kid form. So it was like he didn't go back in time per se, but he went back in age. So like, what do you think is more intriguing? Somebody actually going back in time, or somebody just becoming younger like that? Because I don't know if I would want to be a 10-year-old boy again. I don't think I would make it in this world, you know?
These times.
In these troubling times, you know, but the quantum leap thing would be kind of neat if you could quantum leap into somebody that wasn't about to get, you know, fucking murdered or, you know.
Yeah, I've thought about that myself. What would I do? What kind of time travel would I do? Is it kill Hitler kind of a time travel thing, or
Right, are we going
get
back in
rich?
time in a DeLorean? Are we gonna time do it do something out of Time Cop and like, you know, or Back to the Future and try to get rich quick kind of thing? You know? Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I've always thought I think that de-aging thing or reverse aging thing is really intriguing. Especially if you keep every if you're able to keep all your facets with you of what you know, but that would be almost disturbing too, like being a 10-year-old. Being a 40-year-old man and a 10-year-old body, I mean, that must be what being a vampire is like, you know? Can you imagine being like a 10-year-old vampire, but like you've lived for like 400 years? So you're a 400 man, basically, in a 10-year-old body.
That was Kirsten Dunst in that vampire
Yeah.
movie. Yeah.
Right.
That
And I
was a great
mean, and
character.
nobody was gonna fuck her.
No.
You know?
No, not brought no.
Anyway,
No, because Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, they were always like they were her guardians or whatever. They were,
Right, essentially. I mean, and then there's that movie Near Dark, which I know you like with Bill Paxton. I don't know if you ever saw that. And
yes, it's been a
Lance
while, but
Henriksen.
yeah,
Yeah. Well, the kid in that.
yeah.
He's like he's been around since the Civil War, and yet he's like in a, you know, 11-year-old body, and he wants to like he's hanging out with a girl and they're like, "Don't hang out with her. You're like you're old enough to be her great 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 grandfather." But he's like a boy, he's in a boy's body, so he's just talking to this girl who's like a girl girl. You know, and he's lonely and wants some companionship, but of course he's not going to have companionship with an older woman because he's still in a boy's body.
Yeah.
I don't know what's more
Well,
sad.
isn't that the purpose? Or maybe that's the point, you know, like you de-age because you want to recapture, which it translates to go back in time to your youth.
But it would be a prison if you
But
get
it's in
stuck.
a
If you,
different, yeah,
yeah, you
you're
got
not
stuck there.
it's
Yeah,
a
it's not.
prison.
So that's that. I think we answered our own question then.
Yeah.
It's all a horrible idea, I guess.
Yeah. But I like how this movie explores it. It's well done. The boys, I don't know, the boys were kind of like,
They weren't annoying, were they? I mean, they were a little annoying sometimes, but as far as the child actors, they weren't that bad, right?
no, not bad. I
You
mean,
know,
kind of, but
God,
I've
kind of, I
seen
guess.
worse.
Yeah, I've seen worse too.
Yeah. It's definitely different when if you're watching this as a kid back in the day versus like watching it, I can imagine. Because the old man, we're kind of anchored to these old characters, you know, in this world, and it's all about law, so we get that, right? If it's that, who is it? The quarterback? What did he lose? He lost the arm and the leg.
And that was a real amputee actor, by the way. That wasn't, it was a real actor with a missing arm and leg. I thought that was pretty authentic.
Yeah, it looked. Yeah, it must have been. For sure. What else? The music in this movie. I really like the music.
That James Horner, man. I think
That
he came
James
on at the
Horner.
last second, but that, yeah, he's got that.
I almost heard aliens at one point.
A little bit, yeah. I heard a
When
little bit of,
the spider scene, in the room.
yeah,
The
yeah,
boys had the nightmare and it had that ching ching, like kind of
yeah,
like
yeah,
the
yeah.
aliens thing.
Yeah, there's a little
And
bit of that.
I was as I was watching, I was like, I think James Horner did this.
And of course, Mr. Dark's demise on that goddamn carousel. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I love his the makeup and the practical effects and the how he turned into this like mummy version with no lower body parts. And now do you think he survives?
No, I think they all got swept up in
Oh, the tornado.
the tornado and went back to the fucking dark hellscape that they came from
Oh,
or
another
whatever.
Wizard of Oz reference there.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Because I thought that I saw the tiny guy just take him, and I thought, does he live? You know.
Oh, that's a very good point, actually.
Yeah, he grabs him and
He
takes him
does. He
away.
does.
And he's sort of
Interesting.
like a trickster guy, you know, the devil. They could technically, does he ever die? You know.
You know, so let's say if we remade this movie, you know, if we were to redo this fucking thing today, because people have heard us talk about this movie, and they're like, oh, this sounds kind of cool, but I mean, fuck it. I don't know if I want to see this, you know, fucking 1983 version. Especially the YouTube version, we had to squint a couple times because it wasn't exactly HD. I don't know. Who would you cast in this gem of a flick?
Casting call, we're gonna recast the movie now.
I would cast Tim Burton to direct it. I would hire him first.
Oh, Tim Burton. Okay. So get Tim Burton on board to direct. And Roger Deakins to shoot the cinematography for Tim Burton.
Yeah, because I think there's a whole mythos there. There's a lot to explore. I think it's a very interesting concept.
Let's talk cast then. What about the, let's just get it out of the way. Mr. Dark. Who's your Mr. Dark for the 21st century?
Ooh, Adam Driver.
Adam Driver. Oh, I was thinking Javier.
Ooh, Javier Bardem. Yeah, you can't go wrong with Javier Bardem.
No, but I like Adam Driver too. I like that.
Because
And
I'm
then
thinking younger. Because I think
sure.
in order to be a good opposing force to the grandpa, well, the father, Jason
Because
Robards'
I see
character.
what you're saying. You get a younger guy
It's
looking
a
guy.
younger, yeah, because that's what he's yearning. He's going up against somebody who's younger.
So then the father, it could be old cranky Kevin Costner, you know? He's probably a little too old. I don't know how old Robards was when he made this. He definitely wasn't like a young man per se, but he wasn't like in his 70s, right? He might have been like in
No,
his
I think maybe
60s,
early 60s, yeah.
early 60s. So who could be Robards? Who could be old Holloway Senior? I don't know. A little salt and pepper on that, maybe. All my guys like Costner and Russell are like in their 70s now. I don't know. It's kind of tough.
Do the what's that called?
Maybe a Bryan Cranston. Maybe a Cranston could play him.
Too cranky.
Too cranky? But he was kind of, Robards was kind of cranky.
Yeah, but Robards has like this kind of like a sweet.
You don't think Cranston could do that bit in the library where he's asking them what kind of, they're naming off all the books and he's like, maybe you'd like Tale of Tales, or maybe you'd like Laguna Beach, or
because Cranston does play that character that like holding a lot inside, you know, very well.
Ooh, I just realized I wouldn't mind seeing a Benicio del Toro as a Mr. Dark either, but he's older too. He's older too. What about those kids? I don't know any kid actors that just be like, oh yeah, pick those kids.
I just get any of the
Stranger Things
from the Stranger Things.
Stranger Things. But they're all in their 20s now.
They're
anyway.
In their 20s now. I heard that the kids got older in the obviously when they reshot this thing.
Oh, I could see that. I also read on the IMDb's that I guess Jim Nightshade was originally blonde. Holloway was originally dark hair, but for whatever reason they didn't just cast him respectfully. They were just like, nope, you're playing Jim Nightshade, so we got to dye your hair black, and they dyed Holloway's blonde because they didn't want his dark hair to be confused with Jim Nightshade's dark hair. So those are hair dye jobs. Those are full dye jobs. There's no wigs, which I think, you know, was kind of interesting. And now I can spot a wig a mile away because of my wife, because she's a hairstylist. So she's always like, that's a fucking wig. That's a weave. That's real. You know?
I think they wanted to cast, what's this like old school actor that did Dracula?
Oh, Bela Lugosi?
No.
I know Ray Bradbury wanted to make it for Gene Kelly back in like the day. And Gene Kelly was going to do it, but then it didn't get the funding or what did the
Christopher funding. Lee.
Oh, Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee was supposed to do the part.
He was supposed to be Mr. Dark. You're right.
Yeah.
But he turned it down.
I think it was budget constraints.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jonathan Pryce.
Jonathan Pryce was virtually unknown before he did this.
Yes. He was so young.
I mean, I think this was. Oh, wasn't he? Was this before Brazil? Remember Brazil?
Yeah.
That's a classic. Young De Niro and that motherfucker.
No, he was very young in this. And he had this great quality to him because it was this very kind of enticing, kind of sexy, kind of, you know, young. Because what you think a trickster god might look like, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
The devil. He's going to try and seduce you, kind of a quality, which. And that, which Pam Grier had in Spades, too. She also, like, was amazing in this.
She was. I was just thinking who could play her, and then I'm thinking
Brazil was, like, 2 years after.
Okay.
So Brazil was in 1985. This film came out in 1983.
Let me tell you something, man. If they redid this, I wouldn't even be mad if they just threw Pam Grier back in that bitch. But if they really wanted to go for a young, scantily clad, sexy vixen... Let's keep it. Let's throw Janelle Monáe in there from fucking the fuck was she recently in? Oh, Glass Onion, of course, and of course Hidden Figures. But that I don't know if you're tracking on this, but that Janelle Monáe, those Totskis, those titty. And it's all I can think of is fucking what Marv said in Sin City. She's a dyke, but God knows why. With a body like that, she could have any man in Sin City. You know what I mean?
Some of these old ladies here had some big old butters too in this movie. Was it Nightshade's mother?
Oh yeah, she's been in stuff. I don't know what else she's been in, but she, you know what? She was Griswold's mom in Christmas Vacation. She's been in a ton of shit. That was kind of sad too. Have Jim Nightshade's mom being kind of the drunk and sleeping around with the town folk, and
I know, right?
The dad out of the picture, completely gone. And he was talking about how his father was just away on adventures. And Holloway was kind of a dick. He was like, "Your dad's not even coming back. Mine's old, but your dad's not even around." It's like, wow, dick. Way to be a dick. You can't take some ribbon about your old man's ticker. Instead, you got to be a fucking dick to your only friend in town. And by the way, I think they were the only two kids in for half the movie.
Yeah,
like the movie starts off, they're in detention, and then you see like maybe two or three other kids, in the carnival later, but those kids were people that were like grown-ups that were turned into kids.
Hmm.
So maybe Mr. Dark was doing everybody a favor, like, no, your town just needs kids, so I'm giving it kids.
No, I really do think that this movie has a different cut in there, and there's that aspect of the gore, because yeah, the practical effects were so good. When you see that hand, dude, like just like break,
yeah,
and it just ruptures between the knuckles,
yeah.
And it's a Disney movie. What was it? The kid got his head chopped off.
Yeah,
that was intense too. And again, I'm like, wait, is this a Disney movie? I literally had to like look at my on Google and confirm this was a Disney movie. So
it was one of the first
aspect.
Yeah, it was one of the first like darker movies I think they tried to make, because shortly after this they changed from productions to pictures.
Mm.
Their title, and they started making more live action. But you're right. I mean, I totally forgot about the goddamn severed head.
Yeah, there's like a horror kind of like
movie
there that could have been pushed too in that route. So maybe there's a different director. Maybe it's not Tim Burton that we could, you know, remake this with. And another thing is, if it weren't for the narration, because it's the boy who narrates, right?
Right. I'm
the
assuming, yeah.
Story.
I'm assuming, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would think, I almost thought that this all happened in the old man's head.
Oh, like, interesting.
This was his way. Because you know what? The library, all those books, all those stories.
I thought I remember Jim Nightshade, the friend. I thought I remembered him being evil, but I mean, Mr. Dark tries to get him on the carousel, to join him on the carousel. But I thought I remembered there being a scene where Jim Nightshade was evil, like he became possessed, which was why his name was Nightshade. And then I thought, like, did I think he was like, I think at one point when I was a kid, I thought his father was gone for years and Mr. Dark was his father.
Mm.
And then I'm watching it as a grown up. I'm like, you know what? That would have been a fun little spin. Like if like the dad comes back, but he's like this demonic force.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. I just think you could really do some fun stuff with this concept nowadays.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff I feel like that needs to get remade. Some of this stuff that's like more obscure rather than, hey, let's do a remake of fucking Point Break. You know, like go fuck yourselves. Like remake something like this that actually lends itself to an authentic story from a book that hasn't really been fucked with in 40 years. And, you know, like give it its proper due. Cause even this iteration, I feel like while I think it's a good movie, I feel like most people probably wouldn't get into it unless they had like a nostalgic tie to it, which is funny because you watched this and you enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, I loved it. It's a great little film.
What do you rate this guy? Huh? What do we, I mean, if we're using our ratings here, if we're saying, you know, out of all the ratings we use, you know, we have 7 or so, right? We have 6 or 7. 6 or 7. Hey, Sammy, is it 6? Is it still? Si, sir. Si, senor. 6. We're so proud of him. Somewhere, you know? And we do have 6. We have 6 beautiful ratings on this show. When we talk about our movies, we like to be positive because everybody in this world, anybody knows that you can just fucking kick some fucking shit on a stick and call it a fucking pizza roll. You know what I mean? And that's not what we do. No, sir. Because if we don't pay the tolls, we don't get any rolls. If you don't know your googs, at the top of the heap, we have Call It a Work good, movie theater good, Catch It on Cable good, Home Video. Wait, hold on, I fucked that up. Call It a Work good. Movie theater good, Home Video good, Catch It on Cable good, Sick with the Flu good, and Solitary Confinement good. All right, Jay, what do you got?
I say Catch It on Cable good.
I think so too. It might be a little annoying with the commercial breaks, but I think this movie, even at a tight 90 minutes, with commercials, so maybe closer to like 2 hours with commercials, I think it would be good. I think it could work. It almost feels like a TV movie when you watch it, so I feel like it would work really well on cable, or if you watched it on the streamer kind of thing. I don't know if it warrants Call It a Work good, even if it came out with an anniversary edition in theaters. I don't think people would flock to the theaters to see this. I don't think it's even movie theater good because, again, I don't think people would flock to see this on a big screen. I don't know if it would hold itself up on a big, big screen. but I'd love to see a remake of this. So if we had a new caveat, I'd say, I'd love to see a remake. Good. You know, I feel like there's a lot of potential here. Don't you think?
Yeah, I do. There's a remake here. Yeah, there's some, like I said, there's some dark places you can explore. And yeah.
You know, it would be, you know,
James Horner can do the music again. So
I just realized what would be heartbreaking and also really good is if they were able to like remake this and have Bruce Willis play the dad, you know?
Uh-huh.
That would be just like so on point. Maybe if a couple years before his diagnosis, if he could have showed up, you know, Bruce Willis, like not doing any action, but just being like an older guy who's like kind of defeated, you know?
Yeah, but isn't that maybe too, like, you know, like on the nose?
Oh, maybe. I guess it is a little too on the nose. I just love him.
He wants to, like, recover his, like, he's like, I don't want to forget my laundry list.
I guess it in reality wouldn't be a long movie because Mr. Bruce Willis himself would just probably like fucking shoot Mr. Dark in the first 20 minutes. He'd go get his gun. I love him in that 16 Blocks movie, man. People don't talk about 16 Blocks enough, where Bruce Willis is the older, you know, alcoholic cop who has to escort Mos Def 16 blocks and has to fight his way through corrupt cops and gang members. Like, say what you will about it. I mean, that movie works pretty well.
Yeah.
And, I like seeing people play, you know, lead characters with more tragic flaws than less tragic flaws, because I feel like it opens up the vulnerability and you get a little bit more, you get those pathos and you get a little bit more of that human condition, you know?
Yeah, I might cast, what's that German actor from Inglourious Basterds?
Oh, Mads Mikkelsen. No, just kidding.
Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said Mads Mikkelsen. He's not German.
I would do Christoph Waltz maybe for that role.
No, the that'd be good. Man. I could see that.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the Viking movie? I own it. What's it called?
The Northman?
Northman. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
Did you like that? Because, I mean, that was shot beautifully.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen The King with Timothy Chalamet?
Yes, I did.
Great fucking movie, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a Netflix movie, right?
Yeah,
it's not a series,
yeah.
It's a movie.
No, it's a movie. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep naming other movies that I love. I'm just going to keep naming other movies that I love. You ever seen that movie, like, The Crow? Came out in 1994. Saw it with my dad. That was cool. That was a cool movie. Yeah. You ever seen Rocketeer? That was a good one, too. That was like 90, I think like 92, maybe 91. That was good.
It's like I'm seeing, looking at a mirror.
Did you have any favorite scenes? Did you have any, I feel like we covered a lot. Did you have anything that I missed? Did you want to say anything else about this flick?
No, I think it's a wonderful little movie. I don't know. I'd never seen it before. I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad you recommended it. Yeah, there's some good scenes here. Good shots. The music's good. The actors are wonderful. The characters are, it's fine. I really like it. I really do.
I like picking movies that are kind of more unique, right? Like, obviously we could talk about, if this podcast only covered comic book movies, you know, we're about 400, almost 450 episodes deep in this bitch on this journey of a podcast. And there's been some repeats and there's been some randoms. I think if we were to just strictly cover comic book movies, or even old classic 80s sci-fi action, whatever, we'd probably be okay. There's enough shit out there to like keep going. But I like to throw in movies like this every now and then, because again, while it's not in that realm, it's still kind of in that realm. And it's from, like I said, it's from my youth, you know? And so I'm picking movies that either I really liked or had some kind of impact on me as a kid, or they might've had an impact on somebody, you know? Like I never saw Action Jackson before, but that came up in the goddamn show, you know, because somebody somewhere, I'm sure, was like, Action Jackson was my fucking shit back in the 80s. And I don't know. Like, this movie definitely, you know, it's funny when you go on IMDb and you look up this movie. I'm going to pull it up right now just before we close. I'm going to close with this because this is funny. Like, when a website or, you know, AI will tell you, oh, if you liked this, then maybe you'll like this. And it's funny because some of the things it suggested were just very interesting. Talk amongst yourself, kids, while we figure this out.
Yeah. No, that scene in the library is still my favorite scene. When Jonathan Pryce just rips the pages off the book.
It's a great fucking scene.
And he just starts counting up like 30. And then it really hit me when he said, when he gets to 40, he was like, now you're old.
Oh, dude, now you're old, 40 and old. That's why I had to post that clip, because I'm 40 and I'm fucking old as shit. Dude, it's so bad now. Like, I'll pull my phone out and the light will be on my phone.
Yeah.
And a guy I work with at the moon base, he's like 17, 20 years younger than me. He's like, your phone light's on. I'm like, oh, shit. The other day, my fucking blood sugars were just too high. I was trying to do this thing where I was putting all this information.
Yeah.
On a fucking tablet walking around the office, and I couldn't fucking, I mean, I was fucking shit up left and right on that thing. And I had to like fucking go sit down. Cause I was like, oh, my sugar's a little high. I gotta sit down for a little bit, drink some water. And I changed medications recently. So I'm a little fucked up by it. Cause I gotta get used to this new medication. And anyway.
Yeah, I'm just like Charles Hollow at this point where I'm like, you want to go outside? Daddy's going to have a heart attack.
Dude, I gotta just be mindful. I mean, I'm in pretty good shape other than the shugs, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, picture health otherwise, you know, and I exercise a lot, you know, and I'm out with the boy in the sunshine getting that vitamin D. And I try to eat pretty good too. I don't eat a lot of shit all the time, but I gotta tell you, man, when I do eat bad shit, like, I'm laid out.
Yeah.
Like now if I do cheeseburger and fries, like I gotta take a fucking nap. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I want to get some fries with my little man, he's like, and he wants a Happy Meal, and I get that goddamn quarter pounder with the sidecar nuggets, you better believe daddy's fucking sugars are coming up and I'm crashing for a good hour. Waking up with sweats and a fucking runs. Not a little upset tummy, dude. I'm talking, it's an emergency, you know? And by the way, hashtag 40, at least once a week I have an emergency where it's like, I gotta go and I gotta go now. But I'm going to read these off and close with this. You pull this up in IMDb. Maybe it's for everybody or maybe it's just me. More like this. Dragon Slayer, right? Lady in White, which if you don't know, kids, is probably one of the creepiest 80s borderline horror. It is a horror movie. It's about ghosts, but it's fucking so creepy. Lady in White. Dreamscape with fucking Dennis Quaid. If you don't know, you definitely got to googs. That might actually have to. We might actually have to do that one. That's a good one.
I'd be honored. Yeah.
Is that Christopher Plummer also? I think it is. I think he's in that bitch too. Oh my God, there was a remake. Hold on.
Yeah, Christopher Plummer.
There was an original Something Wicked This Way Comes from 1972. Mm. Who the fuck was in this one? Why wasn't I told about this? Who's in charge?
Eckhart, sir.
Oh, my God. Come on, let's go. Quickly. Yeah, I guess a 1972 made-for-TV version was made. Good God. Ghost Story, The Doctor Devils, The Stepford Wives, Monster Squad, which is hilarious because that's a classic. And I don't really get the time with that. But I guess kids fighting monsters, that kind of thing. Like, it's just interesting when that kind of shit pops up. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's all kind of part of that world, I guess. If you want something that's slow and tense but creepy, not that this movie's slow, but it's not like, you know, it's not guns blazing by any chance, by any stretch.
Not at all.
But
it's a wonderful slow carousel of terror and regret.
It's a backwards carousel of terror and regret. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And that should be a rating too. Is it backwards carousel good? Is it backwards carousel that'll transform you into a 9-year-old boy good? Crazy, dead, gay writer shot his wife, ran off with a 10-year-old boy. And that's the show, kids. So listen, whatever we said on this program, for your ears or other ears, or maybe somebody's ears altogether that you don't know where they are, maybe they're dangling from the neck of Dolph Lundgren himself, wandering around the set of Universal Soldier. He might have played one of the greatest films of all time in that movie, but it's okay. Don't get it twisted. Whatever we said, it's just fiction, except for the Roger Deakins stuff, because, you know, only Jay Clark would come on this podcast, reference a goddamn fucking Brad Pitt movie that nobody's fucking seen, you know what I mean, except him. And by the way, that train scene was the only scene I even remember from that movie. I do remember it being shot really well, because you're the fucking man, dude. You have this way about speaking about films that people, I think, truly appreciate when they tune into this show, you know? You got like
you
appreciate the nuances of things, you know.
I appreciate that, yeah, because I have a hard time talking just normal. Like,
no, you don't. No, it's good, man. Because when I talk about a movie, I'm like, I like that scene where the fucking the thing is a fucking thing and it fucking blows up in a goddamn the fucking thing's hanging from the shit. And she's, hey, you can't walk down there, you stupid bitch. You know, the type of the Bloomingdale bags. And she's fucking walking, you know, just don't go. You're not supposed to go. You know what I'm saying? Or somebody won't fucking save you. You know, and then you break it down like it's all about soul, right? It's about people's souls and kind of what defines a soul and what makes a soul. Souls are kind of like a house. You have a foundation and you have walls. Of course, if you take down those walls, the soul gets out, you know. And
again, I'm looking in the mirror.
I don't know why you turn into Bing Crosby. Like, well, of course, that's what you do when you get a couple of people together around the campfire here and sing a little song. Ra-bum, bum, bum, body. You know what I'm saying? And you start going.
Bing Crosby.
Yeah, you just like, well, I'll tell you this, when I think about this movie, what I like about it is it's all about that Norman Rockwellian, you know, pre-1984 George Orwell, you know, Orson Welles. He just starts spitting out names. Robert Redford before he was Robert Redford, of course. I wonder Robert Redford if he was ever Robert Red before he became Robert Redford, you know. Fred said, he shed, said Fred. Now we're just doing word association. Hey, do you think He Said Fred wrote I'm Too Sexy for women or men?
Man.
Yeah.
That might be the hardest question of the night.
Well, email us at comiccons@gmail.com if you have the answer. It's just fiction, motherfuckers.
Fiction!